Coming up next on the Capital Connection, it's Ithaca Mayor Svante Myrick. We'll talk about everything under the sun with this mayor of color who has so much insight into police and virtually everything else. So join us for the Capital Connection with Ithaca Mayor Svante Myrick. Next.
Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, uupinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I am Alan Shartok. Joining us this week is Ithaca Mayor Svante Myrick, who became the city's youngest mayor and first mayor of color on January 1st, 2012. Welcome, Mayor.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
How would you describe yourself, Mayor, in terms of your politics? Well, in other words, somebody once asked me, what are your politics?
Well, I think, you know, I think I'm quite progressive, but I'm very pragmatic. I mean, I think, look, I've said this before, that I think there are three political parties in America. There are Democrats, there are Republicans, and then there are mayors. You know, that we can walk into the job with a certain ideology, but we just have to get the job done. And as Mayor Koch used to say, there's no Democratic or Republican way to get the trash picked up. And our jobs often work the same way. I think there are a few opportunities you have to bend the arc of justice, the arc of the universe towards justice. But most of our work is just making the trains run on time, so to speak.
Why don't you describe for us Ithaca? You know, my kids and my money went to Cornell.
We appreciate both.
And I recently bought a really good banjo right there. So tell me about the city and its political history.
Sure. Yeah, Ithaca is a college town known for being quite progressive. We call our own bumper stickers say that we're 10 square miles surrounded by reality. We've got about 35,000 constituents, some of the best looking, smartest, and most charming constituents America could ever have, and it's a very, you know, it's a challenging city. We're the most overeducated city in America, which means that it is a pleasure to govern when you're well caffeinated. There's always good ideas, people who are very sharp, people who want to contribute civically, extremely civically engaged, tons of volunteers who are willing to serve on our boards and committees, which is a very good thing. It is very hilly. We're known for our gorges. And a tourist destination for people from all over the world who want to see our waterfalls and visit the campuses. So it's a nice community.
And as you say, overeducated. Out of the 35,000, I wonder how many of them, you know, have something to do with either of the two major colleges you have there.
Yeah, at least half. at least half are currently working there, came to school there, and never left, like myself. I came, you know, to go to school for 4 years, and here we are 15 years later.
And you went to Cornell?
Yes. Yes. My money also went there.
Because there's also this other college down at the other end. And then
yes.
The myth is that the people at Cornell spit down a hill at the other college. Is that not true?
So that's funny, because it's actually not true, as my friends from Ithaca College are quick to tell me. Yeah. They are higher on the hill than Cornell is. So they look down at us. But they're also, Ithaca College, a great institution,
as well
as TC3, which is the community college.
Right. Ithaca College, of course, is great for things like languages and music. And
yeah.
I've known a lot of people who went there. Really terrific.
Broadcasting, a very good
program
there.
Yeah.
Great Rod Serling and David Muir and Alex Boreanaz. Quite a lot of folks came out of their broadcast program at the Park School.
So let's talk a little bit, if we can, Mayor Myrick, about police reform.
Sure.
Because I know New York State is dealing with it all the time, and mm-hmm. you have a reimagining public safety resolution. Tell us about it.
Yes, we were thrilled that we passed our plan. As you know, the governor issued an executive order requiring that all municipalities go through a reimagining process. After the death of George Floyd, that death triggered the largest civic uprisings in American history and the largest
right.
protest movement in American history. And for good reason, because it was about his death, but it was also about the broader pattern of police violence. And we took the executive order extremely seriously. I mean, we formed a 50-person collaborative working group. We engaged hundreds of Ithacans. We did a partnership with Tompkins County. We engaged the consultant, the Center for Policing Equity. And we came up with a plan after 10 months of community input, 10 months, that we're really proud of, and that the Common Council passed 10-0. And here's what we figured out. We figured out that the current dynamic is not working for the police, right? It's not just that the community is upset. The community is obviously upset, especially the community of color. But the police themselves are overworked. They're stretched too thin, and they're asked to do too much, not just too much in a day, but too great a variety of things that have little to do with law enforcement. We just have not had anybody else to call. So we call the police for everything. And then we get upset with them for showing up. So we've come up with a new system. We're going to actually create a new department. Instead of just a police department, we're going to have a Department of Public Safety and Community Solutions. There will be officers inside that department who are armed, but there will also be a unit of unarmed civilian responders called Community Solutions Officers. All reporting, instead of just to a police chief, there's going to be a director. A director could be a civilian director of public safety and community solutions. That idea, in combination with all of the new suggested training, our repurposing of our SWAT vehicle to demilitarize our department, increased social worker co-response, we believe all these things in conjunction will make our city safer, reduce the likelihood of police violence, and make people feel more comfortable living in the city.
So, Mayor, how do you know in Ithaca when you get a call, you know, somebody's beating up their husband or their wife,
mm-hmm.
how do you know whether to send somebody with a gun or not?
Yeah, that's the trick. And that's what we've got to design very carefully over the next year or so. But the best predictor of the future is the past. And when we look at our data, we looked at the last 6 years worth of data, and we found this one thing was glaringly obvious, that there are six types of calls that we dispatch our police to, that we know, when we look at all that data, result in zero arrests. All six of them combined have resulted in zero arrests, yet took up 35% of our officers' time over the last 6 years. So things like taking a report, if my bicycle is stolen and I call the police department because I want them to have a description in case they find it, but I also need to file an insurance claim. The officer has to show up, take that report. Now, that never results in an arrest, right? Unless they figure out that I stole my own bicycle. never results in arrest. So why do we need an armed officer to do that job? And how many people are not calling to report their stolen bicycle or stolen TV or broken taillights or vandalism because they themselves are uncomfortable around the police? They themselves are uncomfortable being in the presence of an armed officer. How many people are we missing in our system? Our survey data and our focus group data tell us that we're missing quite a lot, that there are a lot of people who could be calling and engaging in our public safety apparatus, but are not because of their fear of the police. So we're going to design the system starting with the data that we already have and say, let's start with the call types that never lead to an arrest. And for those, let's send somebody unarmed. If it's a domestic or an assault, obviously we'll send the armed officers. And I think for a lot of the call types, we might send both. We might dispatch both and then have them work as a team to figure out on the scene, okay, you know what? Obviously the presence of an armed officer is escalating the situation. Why don't you fall back a block or two and I'll radio you if I need backup. Or the reverse, where the armed officer says, this is clearly a job for law enforcement, right? Not just community solutions. This is an actual law enforcement job. Let me engage with this while you go take some of the other calls. And in this way, I think we're going to end up with faster response times, right? And this is where I think this solution differentiates itself from the defund, you know, idea. Yeah. And as I was telling you earlier, I believe myself to be pretty progressive, but I'm pragmatic. I think, you know, people want to feel safe. And most folks, they fell into defund or not defund because there was just not enough other creative ideas. But most people, they know the answer is not more police or less police. They know they want different and better.
Let's talk about that for a second. It seems to me, you know, I've studied police for a long time. I worked for the New York City Police Department for a while. The question is, recruitment seems to me to be so important. Have you guys checked in on that issue?
Sure, yeah. In fact, we're a bit ahead of the curve here. And I think it's why our police department, you know, I'm really proud of the work our police department does. So 6 years ago, we started doing psychological screening, pre-screening for our applicants. You know, we asked them, you know, combined with polygraph tests, why they truly want to be police officers, what they hope to accomplish on the job. And you'd be amazed at who you're able to screen out that would otherwise make it through and get hired onto the force. You know, in some years, we're screening out 75% of the applicants who would have otherwise been hired, the people who passed the written test, they passed the interview, they passed the physical test. But we find out that they rate really high on levels of interpersonal aggression.
How do you find that out, Spondy?
The interviews with the psychologist, the psychological screenings. And when you do that, you can find people who are motivated to protect and serve, not people who are motivated to intimidate and to dominate. And that makes all the difference because there are a lot of people out there who would be great at this job, who think that the job is not for them because it's been militarized, especially over the last 7 years. It's become acknowledged in mainstream culture how police violence disproportionately affects people of color. For people of color, this has been known to be true for generations. And there are a lot of people who would be great at this job but are worried about joining the profession right now. It's part of why we want to create this new department in Ithaca as a signal that says, you know, if you want to come do a good job for good pay and good benefits, you want to walk around your own community, you want to serve, there's a way to do that and to move past the current bad political climate that surrounds careers in law enforcement, to be part of like a groundbreaking new approach to public safety. We want to hire people who are interested in that.
Now, it's funny, you, of course, are a man of color. Mm-hmm. We have heard one story after another about driving while black, walking while black, running while black. Have you personally ever experienced that from police?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, my very first, you know, my mom had to give with me the talk. Most black kids will know what I'm talking about, the talk
yeah.
where they explain, you know, you're going to make officers nervous. So if you ever encounter one, make sure you talk slow and move slowly. Put your hands, if ever pulled over, put your hands on the dashboard until they arrive at the car. Be extremely deferential because you don't want to get hurt. And there's all the stories in your family of uncles, and your father and your grandpa and everybody who's had one experience after another. And sure enough, you know, it starts at a certain age. For me, it was about 17, a late bloomer, I suppose. And will continue for the rest of your life. And it's a hard thing to explain. I was, some of it is you would swear was anecdotal unless you've seen it 1,000 times. Like, I was at a conference in Philadelphia, and a friend of mine, a city councilwoman from another community, we were standing outside. And we changed into street clothes. So, you know, you take off your suit and you put on a t-shirt. And you go from being the mayor, you know, you're wearing a suit, you're the mayor. You put on a t-shirt and you're just another young black guy. And the two officers pulled up in their stop car, in their car, pulled to a near halt, you know, and stared me down and looked me up and down. And I said, "Good evening, officers. I hope you're doing well." And they just rolled up the window and kept staring, but rolled up the window and drove by. And she looked at me and she said, "Holy bleep." She said, "I can't tell how many of my constituents claim that happens to them," but she'd never seen it in person. And she had dismissed, and we found this in our 10-month long process too, is that one person after another, especially the black community, but it was true too in like the most vulnerable community, the houseless, would share experiences. And this was the gutting word that we just heard over and over again, would share experiences that to them were dehumanizing. It made them feel like they weren't people, and people that mattered. And if you were to hear that from one person, you go, well, maybe the officer's having a bad day, and I'm sure it wasn't all that serious, and you should just comply, and, you know, all the things we hear about how, look, there's not a real problem in law enforcement, there's not a real problem in the culture right now, everything's fine, just treat the officers with respect, you'll be treated with respect. I think we have to be honest. We're not going to fix this problem, and we're not going to improve the quality of life for our officers either, unless we're honest about what's broken in the culture. And, you know, my officers have always treated me with respect since I've been mayor. And again, when I'm wearing a suit, there's no problems, but is that the kind of society we want to live in, where you get treated better if you're in a suit, and you get treated better if you're white than if you're black, and you get treated better if you're a man than a woman? It's not the kind of society I want to live in. So I think this is the moment to build something better, because I don't want to, you know, Lord willing, I'll have kids someday, and I don't want to have to give the talk to those kids. I hope they don't need the talk.
Exactly. You know, I have an African-American grandchild, and I asked his father, my son, I said, "When will you give the talk?" The talk becomes so important, because what you don't want to do is scare the kid. Kid's now 5 or 6 years old. You don't want to get him positioned so that he looks upon authority as the enemy.
Right. That's right. Yeah, that's right. And also, you don't want them to be naive.
No, naive can get you dead.
Exactly.
It's really something. Now, added to all of this, of course, Sponte, is, you know, the whole concept of guns. Guns have gone mad in the United States. We have, I think somebody told me, 3 for every American, although not every American has 3. What do you see? What are you seeing in Ithaca?
Yeah, exactly the same. exactly the same. I mean, the prevalence of guns on the street, how easy it is to get a firearm, how easy it is for firearms to enter the underground market has made American life, you know, more dangerous than it should be. And we were dealing with, I mean, I think there's a few answers to this, and it seems contradictory to say, well, this is the moment we should be increasing our unarmed response. But I think it's exactly is the moment we should increase our unarmed response, because if getting these guns off the street means getting better community cooperation, you know, I think the crime procedurals, you know, the NCIS or NYPD Blue have done something of a disservice in explaining how most crimes get solved and prevented in America. And that's by people talking to us, calling up the police department and saying, you know, I'm really concerned about my neighbor. I'm worried about John. I know he bought two guns recently. He seems like something's going on with him. Can we get somebody to check in on him? We prevent crimes because somebody calls and says, you know, guy down the block, Tony, I know he's really upset with Mark. He keeps talking about how he wants to hurt him. Could we get somebody to check on that? And then after the fact, we solve most crimes, not through DNA evidence and, you know, forensic analysis. We solve crimes because somebody calls and says, I know there was a shooting over on 2nd Street. I happen to know who did it, and I'd be willing to talk to you about it. And right now, when you have such a lack of trust between the community and the police department, none of those interactions are happening anymore. None of those engagements are happening. And we resort, I'm sure this is true in most cities, you end up resorting to criminal investigation by press release, where you just say, well, there's a shooting on 2nd Street. If anybody has any information, please call us at this number. By building an unarmed response, you can better engage and find these guns in particular, and then use the armed law enforcement, of course, to do the actual intervention with the person that we're afraid of. But I also think, if you don't mind, if putting in a plug for pointing out that, you know, in the city of Ithaca, until 2020, crime had been going down for 9 straight years. The city was getting safer, safer, safer. And in 2020, the crime really rose, you know, to levels that we hadn't seen in about 5 years. And a lot of people thought, well, geez, we need more police officers for that. And I'll tell them, 2020, we didn't close the police department. We did close almost everything else, right? The police were still open, but the schools were closed. The playgrounds and the parks, we took the basketball hoops off. The after-school programming was closed. People's jobs were closed down. Those are the things that cause increases in crime. So if we know that, then our answer to a rise in crime should be more after-school programming, more jobs, more of the things that make people feel safe and secure and less likely to commit crimes in the first place. That should be our priority. And we should, of course, still have a robust public safety department that we can call when crimes do happen.
We are talking to Ithaca Mayor Svante Myrick. Mayor, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
You know, you sound terrific. You really sound terrific. I mean, you know, every time I talk to you, I'm impressed. So my question is, what's the future for you? Are you going to run for a so-called higher office in New York State? They often say you can't be a major statewide candidate unless you come from the 5 boroughs of New York City. Mm-hmm. And here you are in Ithaca, which may be the 6th borough, but I don't know. How do you react to that?
Yeah, our attorney general used to call it the upper west side. I don't know. I mean, I'm 34 now. I've been lucky enough to meet a lot of other elected officials, and I'm nerdy enough to think that meeting elected officials is lucky. And I ask them for their advice, and especially people who have been mayor and gone on to be senator or governor, especially those who end up in Congress. I swear to you, they grab you by the shoulders, they look you in the eye, and they say, stay mayor for as long as you can. It is the job where you feel most useful, you're still connected to people, you're grounded, you get to walk around your city and live inside of your work. instead of, you know, shuttling back and forth to D.C. and just raising money all the time. And so I take that seriously. And I still really love my work and I enjoy doing it. You know, would I run for something else? Sure. But I don't have any designs at the moment.
Let me ask you this. New York's going to lose a congressional seat because of 89 census votes.
Wow.
89.
Wow.
Think about that. One apartment building didn't open the door. That's the end.
Seriously.
And we lose a congressional seat. How will that affect you? How will it affect mayors across New York?
Yeah. Honestly, I think we'll be losing our congressman here in Ithaca. I think that's the seat that they'll take away. New York having less representation in Congress is not a good thing for our state. And I think it's not a good thing for the country. I mean, certainly we should have found 90 people. My God, we couldn't find 90 more people somewhere. But the fact of the matter is that the way that Congress is set up anyway, especially the Senate, these small states have a disproportionate amount of power. I mean, Wyoming has as many senators as New York State with fewer people than Buffalo, right? There's fewer people in Wyoming than live in the city of Buffalo alone. Means that we are pay more into the federal system than we get back. Our infrastructure is underinvested in. We don't get a fair shake from the federal government as is. So shrinking that delegation will make it even harder for us to pave our streets and invest in our schools and keep our public safety workers on the job.
You have got lots of different issues in your city. They're the famous gorges, and they're dangerous. How are you dealing with dangerous gorges?
Yeah, we call them, and because they draw people who want to swim, and many folks have committed suicide in them, we call them attractive nuisances. And, you know, it's tough. I mean, we use a mixture of the what I call the three E's for when you have to change human behavioral problems. We educate, we enforce, and we engineer. So by education, we put up signs that just tell people, this looks idyllic, but it's more dangerous than you think. These are all the dates of the deaths of people who have swum here. We do PSAs. We send out leaflets, especially to the students. For enforcement, we do send around our officers to give tickets and violations where necessary. And then for engineering, the third E, we've actually worked with Cornell University to build nets around the tallest gorges so that it's harder for folks to jump to their death from them, which is an unfortunate necessity. So we use those three E's, education, enforcement, and engineering.
Well, Mayor, you really are terrific, and I love your understanding of some of the psychological and other problems that we all face, and I just want to congratulate you on what you've done. You're always welcome on this program. It's always a breath of fresh air to hear your voice.
Oh, Alan, thank you so much. I've been such a fan for such a long time, so it's very kind of you. I really appreciate it, and I'd love to come back.
Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.